Hey everyone, welcome to the Dad Talks Podcast, the podcast where we bring dads together to share stories in order to encourage and inspire other dads to be better every day. I'm your host, JT Zrodnik. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Dad Talks. On this episode of Dad Talks, I interview Jamie Hopkins. All right, so what's in this interview for you that you should listen to it? There's so much. I enjoyed interviewing Jamie because he's one of the first guests who actually wanted to be on the podcast and be interviewed and wanted to just share his life story and what he's been through as a dad. And he's got a lot. From being a dad in high school and then processing through that, what is their family dynamic? What did his parents say at the time? How they grew into that? Losing a child to, raising his three kids, now sending them off on their own, being a grandparent, and beginning to reflect back on how he was as a dad when his kids were in the house, and now how can he continue to grow and be better for them as adults. And so it's a fantastic interview. I encourage you to listen to the whole thing because it is just chock full of insight and wisdom. So enjoy my interview with Jamie Hopkins on this episode of Dad Talks. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dad Talks podcast. I have an exciting guest today is Jamie Hopkins. Excited for a couple of reasons. One is he's a radio guy, so I'm a little intimidated. Two, he's the first guest who has older kids, so excited to hear about that. But also because, man, was it, I feel like it's 6 months ago you reached out.
Yeah.
6 or 7 months, which I feel bad. So he stopped me at a restaurant and said, "Hey, I'm listening to your podcast," which was like, yeah, right. Nobody's listening to this thing.
You're getting that all the time, I'm sure.
Yeah, all the time. And then even beyond that go, "Hey, I want to be on it." And I'm like, okay, this is awesome. So this is the first guest that actually wants to be on
it. That applied.
That applied for it. The standard's really high. That's why it took so long to get it going.
Many requests.
We had to get them,
Vet my background,
yep,
yeah.
Yep, and all that stuff. So, yeah, Jamie's with us. So, Jamie, just real quick, wife, marriage, how long you guys been married, kids, and then, let's just jump in.
Yeah, I am happy to be here, and you got a cool show. I think there's a lot that dads need to learn and from a lot of different sources, and so hopefully over time you get lots of different cross-sections, so there's something for everybody that has kids at any stage. So yeah, I'm a 49. I graduated from Muscatine High School, but we moved away a few different times to Chicago and, Burlington, so we stayed close, and then we went towards Chicago, which is a little further, ultimately coming back home, mostly because my parents live here and my wife's parents live here too, and we just thought, man, the older our kids get, the more important grandparent relationships kind of are, and so we snuggled in here, and Muscatine doesn't offer everything that I want, but since my parents are here, I think it's been good for us to be here. Cost of living's low too,
yeah,
relatively,
and it is nice because you're 3 hours from Chicago, Minneapolis, basically any big, numerous big cities.
Yeah.
Granted, it's Muscatine.
Yeah, right. sure. But I think Muscatine is a, mostly safe community with mostly good and well-meaning people here. And, I have a contention with my love-hate with Muscatine. It really is a great place in a lot of ways, and some other ways, not so much.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, Mary and I were, we dated for a lot of high school, and, then after high school, we got into college, and so I guess one of the first things out of the gate that's maybe a little sober is that maybe a year and a half out of high school, she became pregnant, and we decided to get married. So we get married, and 6 months later, 9 months later, something like that, the baby comes, and we had that baby. Her name was Abby, and she lived for 4 months, and then she died of SIDS. So I'm 18, Mary's 19. And we decided to whatever our differences are. And we had, we were like every post-high school couple, emotional and stupid and fighting all the time. And but, we did love each other enough that, hey, let's give this a go. And so we did. And then we kind of lost that baby. We had bought a little trailer out at Ripley's and hey, we're going to be a little family. So that was incredibly traumatic, as you can imagine. But as we were grieving, we found out that she was pregnant again, maybe 2 months or 3 months after that. And that's my oldest son, Fletcher, and he's 29 today. And younger brother, Cooper, is 27. And daughter, Addison, is 26. That's old. So, yeah, they're totally adults, dude. I mean, JT, you knew them when they were middle schoolers and high schoolers. And
I didn't realize Cooper's 27. Jeez, I still try to be like, dude, you're just some punk high school kid.
Well, he's got that full beard. He can grow a full beard. And so that's your demarcation line.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's us. Cooper lives in town with his fiance, and he's going to be a dad soon, too. Yeah,
he told me that.
Yeah, awesome. A very exciting season for him. Fletcher lives across the state in western Iowa with his wife. They were both officers in the United States Army, and they kind of met in the ROTC process, and they both since left the Army. They're still in the reserves, but they live in western Iowa, and I don't get to see them as much as we'd like, and he's given us our baby, grandbaby, Claire. She's a two and, I don't know, not quite two and a half, but we get her to ourselves 1 weekend a month, but we don't see him enough. I mean, you can't see your grandbaby enough. And then Addison lives in town, too. She works at Next Gen Motors, and she's a terrific young adult. She's great, got a great spirit. And, you know, fun fact about her, my wife has actually gotten her to change her lifestyle. She shows up at 5:50 at our house every morning. They go to the basement and they work out like a couple of nut balls. They just hit it.
That's awesome.
And I think part of Addison's motivation is she's going to be, you know, standing up in Cooper's wedding, and she wants to look in good shape. So, yeah, that's kind of like my family in a nutshell. We live just outside of town on the Mississippi River. And fun facts about me: I've been playing the drums since I was a little kid. My dad played the drums, so that's kind of, you know, an important, I don't know, thread throughout my whole life, and love to talk about that too along the way if it works. But yeah, that's who I am.
Because Cooper is drums, right? Or both?
I would say that Cooper is a riff writer. He's a guitar player primarily. He plays a little bit of piano too. But he's got a great head for music. Like he arranges a song well. He likes to be in a studio environment where he can, you know, create all the elements. And so he could play drums, bass, guitar, and keyboard, and even taught himself how to sing over the last few years. And
kind of people.
No, man, the thing is, he's not a genius virtuoso in any one instrument, but he is a genius in that he has a vision for whatever he's creating and the end in mind, and he can bang out an album worth of material. I mean, he really is talented, just an overall talented guy in producing music. He's just got a great understanding of what a song needs, and I'm really proud of that because those are elements that I treasure in my musical relationships, and so, yeah.
Do your other kids have any musical talents?
Addison is a terrific singer. She was in a number of productions, you know, in high school and then, you know, in MCC as well, and different productions. So she's a great singer. She's a great dancer. She's one of those girls that will dance. She like she'll do a goof dance for about 10 seconds, but it's a better dance than I could ever do. And she's like goofing around and it's so funky, but she's giggling at herself. Yeah. So, yeah, she's also just very musically talented. And Fletcher, not so much. Fletcher has tons of other talents. He really is a genius guy, but he has a great ear. So he's been such a fan of all the music that I've done over the years that, you know, he can tell, he's got Rush's favorite song, and he knows the licks, and he knows why it's his favorite song. So I'm sort of creative. Cooper took some of that from me, and I'm pretty analytical, and Fletcher took that from me. And so he loves to analyze music, and, you know, we love to talk about songs back and forth.
That's always the coolest part, like with your kids, to where you have these two characteristics and then see it split between the kids of like,
yeah, oh, absolutely.
This one went way more analytical.
More like me in this way. And this one's more like me in that way. And yeah, mom's mixed in too. And Mary is a terrific singer. She, as a high school student, she toured Europe on a choir, you know, tour. And it was a pretty big deal. And she has a great experience for her, but she's a terrific, you know, artist as well. Great singer. So yeah. That's kind of like, you know, my kind of family situation.
So I'm just, man, imagining being 18. So you guys been dating and then pregnant. So that's already, I'm assuming you're like, oh man, big life change.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm part time at the Happy Joes and it's kind of like, okay, well, let's go find, you know, what I guess the thing for me is, I think as a stupid 18-year-old, my thought was, I don't want this child to have a different last name than mine. You know, that, and so I think that was kind of an early thing, like, all right, well then, you know, let's get married and let's commit and let's like go. And, you know, I really went from a, you know, kind of a dipshit, you know, teenager going to MCC, but most of the time, some a lot of times not, you know, I wasn't in great shape. I'd, you know, put on that freshman fitting after high school and just, you know, I probably wasn't a very appealing boyfriend. You know, she loved me and I loved her and we made it work. And so as soon as that happened, you know, I felt the pressure and I responded. You know, I went and got a full-time job and wasn't a great job. And then I got a different job, a little better, different job, a little better. But in 9 months, when we were ready for that baby, we had a place for the baby. And, you know, our folks were enough support along the way to help us, you know, get furniture in there and stuff like that. But yeah, we were totally committed and we had this baby. I mean, just like becoming a parent and that, you know, I can't explain to Cooper what's going to change in his perspective as soon as that baby comes, but your perspective just changes. And it's hard to even explain how, but it's been really great to watch the ways my oldest son Fletcher's perspective has changed since having a baby. And I love that. It's just a, you know, your kids instantly get a giant batch of emotions and perspective on life that opens up like you never saw any of this stuff before. Just in the way that you might look at life. And so for me, that was definitely true. I had this baby and, you know, was theoretically ready to be responsible when the baby came. You know, we just, you know, gave it all. And I was working a lot of hours at a job and she was at home and it was a really great season, really great 4 months. And, you know, just woke up one morning together on a Saturday and realized that the baby, you know, hadn't cried yet or anything like that. And it was later than we thought. And yeah, I mean, it's really one of the most devastating, you know, moments and mornings of my life. I mean, you call 911 and they're sending the EMT and, you know, you're sitting on your front porch waiting for the ambulance to arrive. I mean, there's no real purpose for it. Like you just, you know, just get real numb for a while. And I think I grieved in the sort of traditional male way where it was a short grieving session and then I got to get back to work. I wasn't very effective back at work. And, you know, you carry grief a long time. But, you know, for that period of time, it was grief quick and then go back to work and then carry the long-term grief and, you know, manage that on down the road. But, you know, Mary grieved different. She was sort of in shock for a longer period of time. And then, you know, she just had a difficult time seeing babies or whatever. And then add this weird thing called, oh, I'm pregnant. So I'm also dealing with, you know, all of the natural emotions that go along with pregnancy. And then when Fletcher came along the first year of his life, they were concerned about SIDS. They didn't know as much about SIDS as they do now. In fact, back then they told us to put the baby on their belly and that ain't what you do anymore. So I guess it's the practice of medicine, not the fact of medicine.
Yeah.
So that was kind of discouraging over time to, oh, up is down. So now it's kind of like the food pyramid. Now we found out that the food pyramid is all garbage. We should have never listened to it. And now we have a better idea. But anyway, Fletcher's first year of life, he wore this strap around his chest with these sensors that went to kind of like, remember when you used to rent a VCR and they give you that terrible carrying case and over the straps, like we're carrying this around for the first year of this kid's life. And it'd go off all the time. Like if the baby stops breathing for 10 seconds or whatever, it's supposed to monitor, it's supposed to send to whatever, but it would, you know, disconnect all the time. And it's just like put you into shock 100 times over that first year of his life. And we just decided that it literally wasn't worth the whatever, I don't know, sense of peace we thought we were getting from it. And again, we're, you know, 20 and 21 or whatever. We're not adults yet. And yet we're trying. We had got a little house bought and we're doing great. And then Cooper came along a couple of years after that and Addison a couple of years after that. And, you know, the truth is we didn't try for any of our kids. And I probably didn't, you know, you'd love to be single from, you know, or at least without parenthood's responsibilities in those years, 18 to 21, three, I don't know, whatever that is. So I lost that season of my life. And, you know, as a dumb kid, I probably carried some resentment about that with my three kids that I didn't necessarily ask for, even four really. But, you know, it didn't take me long into my mid 20s to realize like, dude, like this is an honor, not a sentence. Yeah, so I mean, I don't know, like, where does this conversation go? I mean,
so I keep just going to the 18 thing because, so how did your parents respond? One, like, hey, we're pregnant? Because it sounded like they're supportive.
No, they responded badly. They responded with, the kind of the spectrum from really pissed at you guys to I'm really disappointed in you guys. And, you know, oh gosh, I think my father, when we went to tell him, my father actually quoted the Jack and Diane lyric, hold on to 16 as long as you can. And then what is it? Pretty soon, something, woman and man, you become women and men or whatever. Like, what a stupid thing to say, Dad. I mean, but I think he didn't know how to, you know, he didn't have the emotional toolbox to do the right thing. And I think that was probably very typical in, you know, early 90s about how a parent might regard that. And I think socially that tone, that judgmental tone has probably changed for the good. But, Mary's folks are very traditional people, very sort of, you know, evangelical, you know, Christian oriented. I mean, there's that judgmental side of things that existed a little bit. And then, you know, my dad, my stepmom, you know, were not great about it. And then my mom, Mary still gets upset about this, but my mom's pretty liberal and she suggested, well, you know, maybe an abortion. That was very offensive to Mary. And of course we were just kids, but you know, isn't that interesting? Like, my wife, one of the greatest qualities about my wife is that she is just like good and true. And for her, like when you talk about abortion, like this wasn't planned and we're not prepared, but we're going to be, and we're going to make it work, which is, you know, among the 100 reasons that she's been a great, you know, wife and mother to our children. But, I think there was kind of this overall thing that our folks were there and they were around, but they weren't necessarily like, you know, secondary caregivers. Say, you know, they would babysit some, but you know, we needed a lot more help. We needed both sets of parents probably to plug in and help us participate in the weekly operations.
Oh yeah.
We didn't get that. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't get that. So, part of my maturing process has been, accept people for who they are and who they were at that time. They for whatever reason, were doing the best they could, and they couldn't be the kind of grandparents that we wish they would have. Mm-hmm. But, you know, make damn sure we're trying to be the kind of grandparents that, you know, we want our kids to be able to talk about later in life and say, man, mom and dad were totally there. Mary drives across the state to pick up that baby when the kids go to National Guard. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's early and it's late and it's long driving, but it's an honor to have the grandbaby. And to help those kids is literally what we want to be doing with this season of our life.
Yeah. There's a couple of things you said, which interests, because one, my brother and I have had the same conversation of just like how the emotional mental health conversation has changed, you know, with, you know, our generation and, you know, your guys, is to where like my parents, yeah, we're the same of like, what's emotion, what's help, what's, you know, any of this stuff, to where having the feel, you know, feelings and kind of just processing through, you know, what's happening and actually helping out. It's just definitely changing, especially, and then adding with like the grandparents were used, you know, made the point like, yeah, this is the season, we're all in, this is what we're doing. Like, it's an honor. Like, what else would we want to be doing instead of, well, you know, we need to take care of our stuff or do our thing. You know, there's numerous people we talk to where their grandparents are like, eh, we want to go do our own thing. And it's always mind boggling. Like, I think about it, one, for myself with like my dad, since he's not around, like, one, how do you not want your own kids? But then two, like, you have grandkids that are just amazing. How do you not want to be in them? And so, yeah, it's refreshing how you're saying, to where you guys are just like, you know, we're all in, like, this is what we're supposed to do. But even with your kids, of like, you said, okay, hey, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah. I mean, at this season of our life, we're trying to do family as lifestyle. So after the kids, we had a big ranch we raised our kids in, and we sold that when they kind of left the house and we're all starting to do their own thing. And we bought a much smaller house with a much smaller footprint for a much smaller price tag and just kind of tucked in.
Yeah.
And, 3 months ago, we moved to a bigger place now because we have Claire. And when these kids come home, we want we want them to bring the dog if they need to. We mm-hmm. want Claire to have room to run if she needs to. And so we bought a bigger house again.
Yeah.
And so we're just investing in a house that's got the kind of amenities that'll support helping our kids come back home. Because also, we have become the place that we want to be able to do holidays at our house. Mm-hmm. You know, Mary's folks aren't doing that anymore. My folks aren't doing that anymore. So part of us being a value to them is being able to say, hey, you know, no effort on holidays, come over to our place, maybe bring some food or whatever, but we're not having an expectation of even our parents to do those things anymore. We realize it's, you know, it's harder for them and it's probably not going to happen if we don't. And really, these are my wife's words. I'm just parroting and I've had to get acclimated with that. I agree with it. Yeah. It's just not in a male's, in my nature to suggest it and engage it.
Yep.
But yeah, sure as shit, I'll buy a house that accommodates that because I understand the value of it.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, we bought a house that's we can accommodate not only our kids, but, you know, holidays at our place. And I think that's valuable. Even when I don't intellectually think it's valuable, I'm smart enough to know that I'm going to think it's valuable.
Yeah.
When I'm doing them dishes or when I'm getting ready or.
Yeah. Oh, the dog just poops or the kid threw it. Like, oh, that's fine. Yep. This is worth it. I want to come back to that where you're saying the kids, you come back to your house, especially just thinking, yeah, how do you get them to that point where they actually want to show up? But you said something as well with regards to your parents. As parents supporting you, but also grandparents of like accepting them for who they are at that time and knowing, you know, they've got past issues and stuff as well. Cause yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the same that I've had a process through with, you know, with my dad or even with parents where it shifts the way you look at them because you're going, oh man, you really screwed up as a kid, you know, me as a kid, but then you begin to think about their life and like, oh man, like you didn't have a ton of this, so you did the best you could.
Yeah.
And really changes one, the way you view them, but then have you seen that with your kids now that they're older of like, oh, now I get what dad was doing and mom was doing.
Stephen Covey has this great quote, and it's the more you think about it, the deeper it gets. But the quote really is, the space between stimulus and action is choice. So if the stimulus is that you got smacked around as a kid, and the action is your response to getting slapped around as a kid. If you don't have a much space between stimulus and action, you're going to smack your kids around. But if you begin to realize that there is a little space between stimulus and action, and you can increase that space and you can add different choices. Well, maybe the choices are, you know, I got smacked around, but, you know, I just raised my temper and I'll yell at my kids. Well, that's better than getting smacked around, but maybe there's some other choices that you could build in there. Maybe there's a choice called, you know, don't react emotionally to emotional words, or you get smacked around, but you've built in there that I'm not going to repeat that cycle. And those are extreme examples, but I love that. And it's super versatile and you can use it for almost anything. But what I've tried to do, my example of trying to increase that space for more choices is, you know, my dad, he wasn't forthcoming with words in general. He couldn't tell me that he couldn't give me words of affirmation to save his life. Just not how he's built. And I used to resent him for it. And, I swore that I wasn't going to do that to my kids. And so I'd love to talk to you about the pitfalls and things that I've done that maybe dads might could learn from since I've got older kids now and I've been through these seasons, but I wasn't going to do that. And so I did, you know, give my kids a lot of verbal encouragement. Another area, and it's odd that you mention my kids and my parents. So my dad doesn't respond to things the way that I would respond to things. Mm-hmm. I used to judge him for that. Then I got to a point where my dad doesn't respond to things the way I think he should respond to things. Okay. And then I had to get even past that and go, the way that my dad responds to things doesn't necessarily mean that this is how he feels ever or even all the time, which is typically, you know, usually like a non-response or a lack of response, or I'm hoping for a response that I don't get. Okay. Well, so my dad is so, you know, non-responsive to, you know, feelings-oriented stuff or words of encouragement that now, later in life, I've taken the handful of times that he has given me that, and I assume that it's true the rest of his life. And when I do that, then when I don't get the response that I'm looking for, I I accept that I bet these things are still true that he used to say in the past. I bet they're true now. And I bet his lack of response doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't like it or that he doesn't approve. And those are the same type of skills that I'm learning with my adult kids. You got to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Cooper doesn't, I'm having to look for a response sometimes in the way that Cooper and I communicate that I wish were there and I don't always find. But I remember that if I don't read into it too much and if I don't read into his response or lack of response or whatever, and I remember, well, let's just get a little farther on. Maybe it's not, maybe the relationship isn't as distant as you think. And sure as shit, you know, a few weeks later, we might be somewhere doing something and he says something that reveals that nothing has changed. This is still my son and he loves me and he respects me. And so I'm really trying to give a really wide berth to my adult kids and my aging dad. And my stepmom is great and not necessarily in the same way, but my mom passed about a year and a half ago and I was trying to give her the same wide berth as well. My dad, his dad died when he was 10. So there was a stepdad, but still, you know, your dad dies when you're 10. I mean, those are really important years. So the older I've gotten, the less I've been willing to convict him on the things that I haven't gotten. You know, my dad was a Green Beret in Vietnam. Like, period, mic drop. I mean, that's a really impressive thing about him. My dad never smacked me around. He never really raised his voice. He showed me how to work hard. He didn't go to the bars and didn't have a lot of destructive habits. So I'm focusing on those things and all the things that I wish were a little bit different, you know, I can accept. And that helps our relationship. And so that's the same type of thing that I need to give my kids. As a 27-year-old, he's not thinking what his 49-year-old dad is doing today.
Yep.
My 29-year-old son in Western Iowa, you know, he's actually finishing up his engineering degree. So I wish I had a much closer connected relationship with him, but he's at Iowa State, man. He's banging out engineering classes.
Yeah.
And then when he goes home on the weekends, he's a dad to his family and his wife. And so, you know, I don't get as much from them, as much time with them as I'd like. But when we do have time together, I'm trying to glean things that will sort of satiate me until, you know, I want to be super connected to my kids, and I haven't always, and I wish that weren't true. But now that they're adults, I want to spend time with them and hang. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, sort of as a cautionary thing, if I started to think about the things when they were younger that I wish I had done different, can we talk about some of that?
Yeah, for sure.
So I played the drums the entire time that my kids grew up, and I probably spent too much time playing drums. I wasn't stupid enough to like tour the world and see you later, Mary, because it's, you know, little thing called health insurance. You know, you gotta find a reliable job when you've produced three children. But I worked hard, and then I probably played too much drums. And regardless, from the kids' listening age until the rejection age, 13-ish, let's call it 13, yeah. All those years, I kind of spot parented. I did good. I spoke to the thing that needed to change. I requested the behavior that I wanted to be different. I was positive. I was encouraging. I, you know, drove them where they needed to go and spent the money on all the, you know, periphery that you need to make those activities work. But I probably gave too much time to playing music and playing the drums and not enough time to the ordinary time, because I think what happened is that pretty soon the eye rolls came, and you know, you kind of like the kids quit listening, or it quit being I quit being a relevant source for, you know, I could punish them, but I still knew I wasn't getting to their heart. And I wasn't getting to their heart because I hadn't logged enough ordinary time to earn the collateral to discipline. And I think that's a really important one that I wish I could have done different. I was just, you know, young, and I wasn't thinking it with the end in mind, because had I logged more ordinary time, and in that season where there was rejection, 13 to whatever, 16, 17, like they didn't want to be around me in those years because I hadn't become an important day-to-day source for them. when they were willing to be around me. Mm-hmm. So I wish I had been different. And what it really did is just, so for those dads out there that have kids that are in those ages, sort of 7, 8, 10, 11, give them your best in those years, if nothing else, so that when you have to discipline in the future, you have credibility with your kids. And we kind of lost that. And I was always like, do you know how good you guys have it? I am doing so much better for you guys than was ever done for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, mom had the same song. That bullshit doesn't matter at all. I mean, not at all. You get zero. There is zero resting credibility for any of that. Because for whatever you give, you know, my buddy's friends, you know, I go over to his house and there's ho-hos in the cabinets all the time. And he drives us around. So you've always got that, you know, friend of your kids that's living better than you are. And those your kids go over there and then, you know, whatever you're providing doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
And that's really it. In those years where rejection starts, part of that is because they're going other places and they're hanging out with other people and they're looking at other parents, and that smell bullshit quick. If, hey, these parents seem way cooler than you. These parents take us to cool places and you don't. These parents don't have a lot of money, but we can do whatever we want when we go over there. So you're dealing with lots of different spectrums of parents, and you know, you can't win. The only way that you can really win is if you have your heart, if you have their heart before they get into those years where rejection is going to occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just thinking about what you're saying, cause I, in a sense, lived that, because with a divorced family, to where like we went and lived with our dad, brother wanted to, cause like, hey, we can do whatever we want. Well, you got there and that freaking sucks, because it's like, we can do whatever we want because he doesn't care. He doesn't pay attention, you know, and then begin to realize like, yeah, kids want, you know, we would do stuff just so we could maybe get punished, to be like, hey, are you actually paying attention? You know, we want the boundaries, we want this stuff to happen. But then now in the situation where I'm at of, you know, there's another parent that goes, hey, we'll buy you this stuff, we'll do this. Oof. Hey, why don't you get this? But it just, and it's fine. I'm like, I know what's happening. I lived that situation as a kid, but it speaks to the truth that you said of like the ordinary things. I'm like, that's what I'm going to do well, of like, hey, Mike, you know, you want to play board games, you want to wrestle, you want to go for walks, you want to do these ordinary things that are building up, like you said, all that ordinary time to where they remember that. Cause I think about it, you know, as a kid, to where I'm like, I can't think of, I mean, we went on trips. We went to Disney World or something. Like, I can't remember anything from that. But I can remember mom showing up to games, or mom coming to the, like those everyday things, to where like, yeah, that's why I would call you mom, because you were there.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, to where it's the little things. And so that's even me as a dad now of going, yeah, how do I get the most out of each day, intentional, you know, here to where, yeah, mine's. See, my oldest will be 10 this year, to where I'm like, oh gosh, I'm almost out of time, to where she's like, nope, I'm done. I don't want to listen, you know.
Right.
And she's enough like her dad that's also what scares me, to where I'm like, crap, I'm screwed on that. But then I just, man, listen to you talk. Like, how did you get so wise that you're processing through all this stuff? Like, is it your wife? Is that just how you're wired? Like, what set you to where, like, hey, the Stephen Covey thing, let me process through this, and let me process through my dad and how I, you know, like, how did that happen?
I am analytical. And so from an early age, I wanted to reverse engineer the ways that I was screwed up so that I didn't repeat that cycle. And I did a bad job of it for a lot of the time, but I think I just I don't want my kids to hurt the way I hurt. Mm. And I wasn't even abused. I just don't want them to hurt the way I hurt. And so if I can teach them some, if I can put something in there into their spirit to avoid that, and you know, a lot of times that's self-esteem stuff. And you know, I'm horrified to learn now that my kids are adults and they don't talk to me about a lot of the stuff that's going on with them, but they talk to me enough about what's going on that I do feel connected to them. But, you know, they've kind of revealed like, hey man, when I was in high school, I was dealing with these insecurities and I was dealing with these fears, and shit, we didn't even know it. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know it because we hadn't, I'm just putting the responsibility on me. We hadn't created the space for them to be able to talk about it. And I hate that.
Yeah.
So I guess, again, those are things that they dealt with in middle school, high school, that I could have done a better job of being an aid to them if I'd have invested better mm-hmm. when they were younger. Mm-hmm. Going to the games is one thing, but it's like getting up in the morning and not being an ass, you know, cooking up a little breakfast. Yeah, I mean, yeah, what it usually ends up doing is setting aside your personal, you know, interest about almost everything
yep.
and just giving more time than I was inclined to when I was younger to whatever that need is for them. And a lot of times it's not even anything but hanging out and being chill, like not being, you know, not reminding them of the thing that you want to remind them of, you know. Yeah. I mean, I nag the shit out of my kids. And I guess the thing is, like, I continue to want to look at that stuff because I want to be a help to Fletcher when Claire gets a little bit older. Mm-hmm. And I think this is like 2.0. I was trying to do better when I was 23, 24, 25, you know, stupid and young and immature. Now I'm trying to, I am more mature and I have those things that I have learned and compounded on top of that so that I can be a useful, you know, parent to my adult son, you know, with their kids. But I've always had jobs that have had a sales component. I mean, even when I ran the radio station, first of all, I was never on the radio. Commercials at best.
Okay.
I mean, my job was spreadsheets and to, you know, get salespeople to go out there and, you know, get more clients and to get more sponsors. But all of my jobs have been that way. And I think if you're going to have a career talking to people for a living, you better learn what that means. Like, you know, if you can only talk to people that return your good energy to you, well, that's easy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are tons of personality types and most of them you have to decipher how they feel from, you know, lots of different characteristics. So I think just having a job with that kind of nature has driven me to, you know, learn a little more about communication in general and the mm-hmm. nature of people, whatever. I continue to want to be a good dad to my adult children. And so I continue to like look inside about areas that I need to keep working on so that I can continue to be an asset to them. And so that they will continue to want to be connected to me. And I don't know if that means anything, but I guess I listen to a lot of podcasts and mm-hmm. some of them are Joe Rogan and some of them are, you know, religious sermons, you know, things and dragging me through the Bible to hear things in a new way that I need to hear. But I think it would also be safe to say that I didn't grow up in church at all. And I went to Calvary, which is where Mary's family had gone traditionally. And, you know, it was a Baptist church that, you know, this models every Baptist church that decided to do a contemporary music and worship that grew and, you know, hired musicians or, you know, hired a great worship leader and hired a bunch of musicians. And so church for me was, hey, I met a bunch of guys that have a different kind of context about, you know, the principles that they're living their life under. And I don't mean like behavior type stuff. I just mean like, you know, that basic concept of dying to yourself, mm-hmm. like parenthood is dying to yourself. Fatherhood is dying to yourself. But church and just understanding what's in the Bible that changed my perspective and gave me a different bedrock from which to, you know, kind of like push off from. And, you know, and then that church has also been a terrible place of sadness for me and, you know, a bunch of really crappy stuff that happens when you get along in a church for a long time. But I never quit learning how to try to find, you know, something that God was saying to me, you know, in the world or through a friend or whatever. And part of the thing that was taking up most of my time that I talked about music when my kids were small was playing a church. I mean, that will take as much time as you give it.
Oh yeah.
And I loved to play the drums and I felt like I needed to play the drums. And because it was in church and with a church band, we toured the country at different times, you know, Andy Landers and that group at Calvary. And I thought that, oh, God has me in this place. Yep. He wants me playing these drums. He wants me playing this music. And I mean, it's not wrong, but I think, you know, God would probably say to me today, like, I didn't want you to do that more than, you know, what if you shaved 25% off of that and gave that back to your family, like willingly. And so that's where I had a problem. I wanted to go play drums. I didn't have the patience to sit with my kids. And now I wish I had. And I guess that's discontentment over time has driven me towards really looking at, you know, because if I can give Fletcher a couple of ways to reframe what he's looking at, maybe I can shave the points off of what's really, you know, hurting him right now. Yeah. Young kids are hard and, you know, they're going to have more. And, I used to be that dad that would lecture and browbeat, and now I just want to be that guy that says the one thing. I had a conversation with dad. We talked for a half hour, but the only thing I remember is this little tidbit he gave me, and I want to be that guy. I'm not that guy, but I want to be that guy that just says the right thing at the right time and not more and not less.
Mm-hmm. Well, then that's, yeah, on that, just saying the right thing, you know, I think about it. The challenge with little kids have gone, yeah, I want to just, oh, you did this, and you give them a lecture, and you're like, they're seven. Like, they don't understand. So, you know, I'm getting very concise of going, okay, here's the action, you know, how do we, you know, figure it out, move forward, instead of, yeah, just lecturing and laying it on them to where they just feel like crap, to where like, yeah, I know I screwed up, like, just give me something, move forward. And but even then changing the mindset myself, because as, you know, a kid, that, I mean, that's how, you know, our parents were of, okay, there's, you screwed up, we're spanking you, you know, and that's it. And or if you did something bad, we'll just lecture you for a while, yeah. But never, you know, the conversation side of it and kind of the why, and like help me process through it of like, what is the issue, to where I feel like that's the biggest change of, yeah, it's not necessarily, you know, trying to be the friend to the kid, but more of that understanding just how, well, we are as humans.
Objectively, what's the best thing right now? And
yeah,
it's hard in those moments because you're not objective at all. You're super subjective. Yeah. I'm freaking tired, or I'm an irritator, or we've talked about this, or whatever. So to me, like that, okay, so stimulus, the space between stimulus and action is choice, right? So mm-hmm. if stimulus is my 10-year-old, you know, keeps doing this boneheaded thing, or maybe it's small, maybe it's they're smacking their sibling around, and it is something that has to be addressed immediately. If that's stimulus, and response is, yeah, you know, could be a smack, hopefully not, could be a browbeating, could be going on and on. Mm-hmm. I mean, a browbeating is not the same as going on and on. Another bad choice could be, but like sort of holding that grudge, that parent that's like, they keep that in the atmosphere. They keep that wrongdoing in the atmosphere, and they won't let that child. It's almost like, and that was more me, like I had to harumph around the house for half a day, you know, when the kids still knew that I was still upset about whatever I was upset about. I would think a better choice. So those are among the choices that you have in that space. But choices that I've added over time are, what if I made this a short deal right now, and then I revisited it when I'm not so mad, and when they're not either expecting a full frontal attack, or they want to roll their eyes, or, you know, in the moment, look, I was great at it. I also think sometimes dads forget about how crafty our young kids are. Yeah. You know, they smell bullshit, and they know how to manipulate situations to control your response. And the response that they're looking for is usually like either nothing or something short. Mm-hmm. And then they want to forget about it, because that's what I did.
Yeah.
And I got pretty good at it. But, you know, the mature father probably, you know, again, objectively, if emotions weren't part of the equation, you're probably just like, you know, making that infraction small for, hey, you know, this is a big deal, and here's why. Let's keep working on that. And, you know, maybe that's something we talk about later, period. Mm-hmm. And then you literally, like, number one, emotionally let go of that, you know. So it's die to yourself, right? So most of the time when we're responding in anger to our kids, it's really about us. Mm-hmm. It's really about, you know.
You offended me,
or you embarrassed me, or you made me feel stupid, or you didn't respond to my friend the way I wanted you to. It's about us. Yep. So to me, that biblical message of dying to yourself means, you know, setting aside how you emotionally feel about as many times as you can get to an objective analysis. And you usually can't do that in the moment. Mm-hmm. So if you can shorten the moment, get out of the moment, and then return, you know, maybe the return is when you guys are doing something cooler a day later, and there's a, like, you can feel like the wall's down, like we're at McDonald's having an ice cream cone and there's an open window, and they're not, you know, they're not feeling defensive, and you can revisit that topic. And I wish I'd have been better at that. And the reason that that works is because that's basic human communication.
Oh yeah.
But I think me as a father, when the kids were younger, I was emotional. Now, what I said was right. The principle I was saying it about was straight on. I didn't insult. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't, you know, raise my, I mean, they knew I was serious, but I wasn't, you know, a yeller and screamer. All those things aside, like that, that was my justification. I wasn't wrong. What I said was right. But, you know, when you said it, the way that you said it, those are all things that I just didn't pay attention to a dad in my 20s. And I should have, because no adult is going to respond. You know, I mean, kids are just defensive, and adults are defensive. People are defensive. Yeah. So anything that you can do in a teaching time or in a corrective time, like let a little time pass, and then that defensiveness will go down and you'll find another opportunity.
Yeah.
Or you won't, but it won't go worse. It won't go worse than handling it bad in the moment.
Yeah. That's what my oldest is exactly like me, to where something happens, she'd be like, why? What, like, wants, you know, just keeps going or keep trying to defend or whatever, to where, you know, trying to set up with her of like, look, it's great. I want you to be that way, to, you know, be, you know, stand up for yourself, and, you know, you don't just let someone say, hey, you're wrong, and then take it and walk away and be timid. But saying with dad, like, we're both going to keep upping it to where, go away. I said, you're in trouble. Exactly what you said. Go away. Let us process through. Once we're both calm, come back with, hey, dad, you said we shouldn't do this, but you did this. Or, hey, dad, you know, and to where it goes so much better, instead of you keep bringing it up, then I have to come up on top of, you know, and then just back and forth, where it's like, just go back away for a second. Let us both calm down. And then I laugh, because then my youngest, who's, see, Juliet will be 5, but is in preschool, she came home and they do this thing called time machine. It's exactly that, of the two kids are having an issue. Okay, take a step back. Okay, think about it. Now take a step forward to each other. What did you do? You know, and processing through to where the walls drop, and then they take care of each other. And she'll do it at our house. You know, like, hey guys, time machine. You're like, oh gosh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, yep. Everybody's getting heated. But it is, it's just like you said, it's basic human communication, to where parents, and even just thinking, like you said, the response, how I respond is going to dictate how the kids respond. Or they know if I act a certain way, dad's going to do this response, to where, it was like, I'm letting a 4-year-old get me pissed, you know, pissed off, and I'm throwing a temper. They're going, I won.
Right.
It doesn't matter, to where like, oh, wow, I'm acting like an idiot. And so having to process through it of like, oh, okay, this is what's happening. And so I've had that conversation, like with my mom, because I mean, there's no talking. It's bedroom, whoop, you're done. And, you know, we are confrontational. Like, that's we just butt heads, and we'll basically yell it out until it's done. And so with my kids, you know, she would watch them like, God, they were just, you know, not necessarily awful, but just had troubles with them. I'm like, okay, you know, what happened? So one was like, my youngest was defiant and didn't want to do a certain thing. And, you know, my mom was like, I just kept pushing her, and eventually she got in trouble. I'm like, you got owned by a 4-year-old. Like, do you understand? Like, no, like, yeah, that's because she's pushing you to see where you're going to let the boundary and work. Like, if you just stop it immediately, it's done. She's like, no way. I'm like, yeah, watch. Like, so as soon as mine starts the, you know, temper tantrum, done, we're out. I'm not dealing with it. And immediately shuts down, because she knows no one's paying attention, no one watching. And so, yeah, it's been fun, of just fun, quote unquote, right, with my mom, you know, helping her process of like, because, you know, she even talked about, she's watching the kids this summer, like, how do you do this? I'm like, well, really, it's just talk to them. And remember, they're 7. So their mental capacity is not the same as you as, you know, 60 plus, to where you've had all these life skills. They're going, I don't know, something's not right. So I'm going to punch someone in the face.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a step back and process through to where,
And that's pretty generational, right? I mean, you know, I think that parents, in my parents' category, like, kids just, you know, that, you know, be seen, not heard.
Yep.
So, you know, that eroded a little bit when I was younger, but now, like, that's just not how we do it in the United States of America. Yeah. But interesting to know that around the world, seen, not heard is much more predominant than what we're trying to do. So we really are doing our kids a great service, and we're teaching them how to be productive people, and lots of other parents across the world aren't. Mm-hmm. And it's... So that's always been a great for me. Like, my kids have been so bright that I did create that legacy of, you know, escalation. Mm-hmm. You know, I was willing to escalate.
Yeah.
Because when they're 11, you've got a way better intellectual argument, and you drill them down, and I beat you with my intellectual skills. Yeah. But when they're 15 and they're sharp, they know how to argue with you. They've been getting beat by the adversary. Now they finally have enough of a skill set where they can manipulate. They beat you in conversation.
Yep.
If nothing else, then just them being incredulous and teenagey and, you know, just crappy in the ways that they can do. But I have to think if I had done a better job of creating a different legacy early, then I would have had their ear a little better when they're teenagers. And what you're doing, I wish I could have done. And I wish I got the feeling that most dads are doing what you're doing. I'm not sure that that's true.
Yeah.
But I think most dads need to. And I think you are so self-aware, and I don't know, I really respect, I've always thought you were an intelligent person, and I've seen you with your kids, and you have amazing kids.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I can see the work that you and her have done, and your kids are.
And I would say, you know, I'd like to say, oh, it's amazing work. I think the biggest, which is crazy, just thinking about, you know, the stuff that I've been through, to where as awful as a divorce and everything was, it forced me into a bunch of this stuff of, you know, being emotional and feeling and having to process through of like, oh yeah, now I'm, you know, also dad and mom. So I have, you know, enforcer and the, you know, nurturer.
Yeah,
and,
nurturer.
You know,
yeah.
How do you process through that? How do you handle that? How do you have, and it helps that I have a very tender son that will come and cry. And I'm like, we don't cry. Boys don't cry. You know, when we, I don't even remember crying, you know, like that didn't happen. And, but then having him going, okay, yeah, like this is normal. This is what you're supposed to be. And so it's definitely, which is crazy. Like your kids teach you so much. It's exactly like you said with Fletcher, to where like the perspective and stuff as he begins to change of like, oh, this is what it means. You know, you know, you're selfish. You get married. It's really obvious. Then you have kids and you're like, oh man, I can't do it. Awful human being because, yeah, like you said, I'd rather go do this than have to sit and just stare at this, you know, 6 month that can't do anything, but I need, you know, and so it is amazing what your kids can teach you. And if you allow yourself to do it, and I don't know, like that's why I'm encouraged by you, because I don't know why more dads, I guess I do know why more dads don't do it, because it is hard work. And it's because then you have to sit back and go, oh, I failed, or
it's lost. Hard work. It's ungratifying. You're embarrassed on a fairly regular basis. You are afraid that even if you do put a good effort at it, that your kids will still roll their eyes and think you're like the stupid old man. I mean, all those things are true. And for me, you know, I've been in companies. I'm trying to move up the ladder, trying to do better. And so I'm getting achievement at work. I'm getting praise at work. And I'm getting, you know, I see that I'm getting a lot done. And my coworkers, you know, feel that I'm valuable. And then I go home and my, you know, 12-year-old, you know, not only doesn't care, but makes my life worse. Yeah. And then, you know, then they get into some drama. And again, it's just so very self-focused. I was so very self-focused. Now, what myself was trying to do was earn a great paycheck so I could, you know, get them bills paid. Mm-hmm. And then I need to go play some drums so that I could, but I probably spent too much time on the professional pursuit, a little bit too much time playing music. And, I should have just, you know, you turn work down 10%, you literally have 10% more to give your family, but only if you want to, only if that 10% that you turn work down, like you really do make space in your spirit and your brain to be able to accommodate your kids. And that's hard. Mm-hmm. That's hard. You know, men just really aren't programmed to do that. We're programmed to go, you know, do better, like go achieve. And, you know, there's just a lot of mundane. And, I guess another big piece of advice that I would tell anybody that's got children your age, as they move into that kind of more rebellion age of the teenage years, like you're going to be embarrassed a lot. Mm-hmm. And then what's going to be revealed, like it was to me, is that your identity is wrapped up in your kid's reputation or how your kids do. Cooper. So I'm a pretty little guy. I'm 5'6", 5'7", but I was a good football player. And I wasn't even on the line. You know, I'm not even that big. But I was so small that I could get up under these big tackles, shoulder pads, and I could do pretty well. I was a center and a nose guard. For me, that was a huge piece of my identity, like drums and football. sure as hell wasn't, you know, schoolwork. It was drums and football, and I was pretty good at both of them, you know, for a while. And so my identity was built around those things. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that I'd get some attaboys for from my dad. So when Cooper wants to quit playing football as a sophomore, and my son Fletcher moves through all the varsity years playing, but he doesn't see a lot of playing time. Mm-hmm. I've like, shit, looking back, that was me. I was feeling like, why aren't you guys providing me more honor on the football field? Are you kidding? You want to quit football?
Yeah.
It's so stupid. And then, I think as a sophomore for the first year, Cooper decided to go out for wrestling. Now, you know how wrestling is. Those kids start.
Oh yeah. Young.
When they're younger, yeah. You know, your kids and younger. And so Cooper as a junior went for the first time. He worked his butt off the whole season, and he didn't have a great record, but man, when he won matches, that was my personal identity. Look at what he did, and he's only been wrestling this year. That's so hollow. Mm-hmm. And that perspective, you know, I want to convict all you guys that are spending $500 on the third aluminum bat in the mm-hmm. collection, and that are buying the $150 cleats for your kids. Like, that stuff is all smoke, and in about 5 minutes, it's not going to matter whether you bought the best gear for the kids, or all the time and energy that you devote into traveling sports from season to season and kid to kid. And you're out there every weekend doing something for some kids, spending most of a Saturday at some field, whatever. Yeah. Like, we used to think like this stuff is so important, and it's just not that important.
Amen. Oh man. I'm in the midst of that right now going, there's a couple of us dads are like, this is ridiculous. Like, mm-hmm. 9-year-olds and people spend the money, and the stuff is just
traveling into hotels and overnight. Yeah. And, you know, it could be dance, or it could be, you know, it's all the different activities that are available. Like, that stuff, I know it's the most important thing in the world to your kids. And yet it's don't ever make it the most important thing in the world to you. Like, just make it a temporary season, you know, because you're going to get embarrassed at some point. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be a better performing kid out there.
Yeah.
And that can't affect you as a dad. That's ridiculous. You know, Cooper's skills were in music, and he went to, music is, has endurance. You can do this his whole life.
Oh yeah.
Playing football for the high school years, or, you know,
some glory for a few years. That's it.
And the glory is even silly. I mean, the glory was based on me and the glory that I felt. And, but I had resourced him 100 different ways, 100 times better to not have football have to be your source of identity. Your source of identity should be, how well do your kids know your heart? How big and fake is the mask that you put on around your kids? Mm-hmm. Like, if that's a convicting thought, and it's been a convicting thought for me. I mean, you know, at different times I've been up to my ankles and doing something that I shouldn't have been doing, or, you know, and the thing that's always brought me back, that current that's always brought me back to the middle, is if my kids knew I was doing this, you know, how would they feel?
Yep.
And, you know, through their high school years, like, they would have known it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're paying attention. They're just paying attention. I don't know what the cautionary tale is, but just try to put that stuff in perspective. They're going to have a lot longer life to live than the pressure you're putting on them as a high school kid or middle school kid.
But I think, like, the tale is exactly what you're saying, to where a lot of the issues come because dad doesn't know who he is. And so then he's trying to push it on a kid, to where then these, you know, boys and girls, they have no idea who they are in high school, and they're trying to figure out, and they don't have a solid rock to hit against of like, yeah, dad knows who he is, so I want to lean against dad because there's something solid, you know, I can land on, instead of, yeah, dad is off doing this, or dad is doing this, or dad's no better than I am, so why would I turn to dad instead of, yeah, dad's got it figured out. Dad knows if I play football and I fail, he doesn't care. He's like, okay, how do we move forward? But
yeah,
it doesn't impact who you are as a person, to where that's huge. Because, yeah, mine was, our dad got a ton of his identity off of our, you know, success or failures. And yeah, I look at it now, I'm like, gosh, I never want to do that to my kids. Because you're like, it's just stupid. And you look at, like, one, you as an adult look like a freaking idiot yelling at middle school, high school kids because they sucked on performance, and going, like, dude, you know. But I think the issue, because his identity, I mean, he didn't have anything solid. It was, I need my kids to be good to give
justify
me.
To
give me worth, to give me value instead of, no, I don't need anything, you know. And I think that even goes back to like with the emotions you're saying with your kids, to where if you're, the reason we get mad is because, yeah, you embarrassed me, you did this. But if it's like, no, I know who I am, I'm good and solid. Like, hey, yeah, you're making a mess or you're being embarrassing, but like, that's on you. And I could care less what, you know, Karen over here thinks about me because my kid is throwing cereal in the breakfast, you know, cereal aisle.
Right.
Like, okay, I'll handle him. And, but I'm not going to worry about her because she doesn't define who I am or my identity. But it goes back to where, yeah, you're just so worried about what others think and you just don't have a solid foundation of going, this is who I am and this is how I can spread it out to my kids.
Yeah. My wife mostly taught me these skills, but with my daughter, that's a whole nother podcast. Like how to be a dad to a daughter, how to be dad to a teenage daughter, how to be dad to a teenage daughter. My kids were coming up, you know, social media hadn't gotten so good. You know, like there's no TikTok yet.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you could still see a Facebook feed that looked reasonably like the things that you're interested in.
Yep.
But they were just getting good at hooking kids when my kids were in middle school and high school. And now they've really perfected it. But, you know, that stuff really screws up your kid. And, you know, if you can't be a real person to them, then the only real people they're ever going to identify with are going to be online. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like, I think I've always tried to help Addison know that I was the first person, I was the first man that she loved. Mm-hmm. And there's nobody else that represents anybody in my life, even close to the represent that what you are in my life.
Yeah.
You are my daughter. And what that means is that I love you the way I love no one else on this earth, not even your mom. It's a different thing than that even. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how well that did, but that was kind of my company line through all those years. And then there was a bunch of years where there was heavy rejection I think she read into my actions. And, you know, even though I was saying those things, she would do a lot of things wrong. And 50% of those things would be self-destructive oriented wrong. And I could never find the right words to break through. I was not a credible source through all those years. And the only reason that I can really think of that happened is because that I hadn't done a better job investing that ordinary time when they were younger.
Yeah, I heard a great illustration once talking about girls to where, you know, when they're younger, like you said, up till 12 or 13, it's like a swimming pool to where they're on the edge. And then once they get in the teen, they jump in the pool. And so they'll go swim and do exactly, you know, pull away from you. But then they'll come back to the edge of the pool to see if mom and dad are still there. So it's either pushing or fighting. And just that reminder of like, they're coming to see, hey, if I'm doing this stuff, are you with me through the thick of it? You know, and so it's just really encouraging. Like, sure, in the midst of it, when my daughter's like, no, I hate you, I don't want anything. Like, oh, she's just trying to make sure I'm staying with her. But it is an encouraging thing. Again, going back to the identity, if you're solid of going, okay, she's processing through something and she just needs me to be that safe boundary to her now to where, yeah, she may not care, do whatever, but as long as I'm not reacting and making it worse, you know, where she can come and hit and go,
yeah,
okay, dad's kind of the safe harbor, even if she doesn't let, you know, in of like, dad, you know, hug me or take care of me. But knowing when I yell at you, you don't leave and reject me like everyone else does in the world. I know.
Right.
In a twisted way, it makes sense. But like, yeah, like.
I think we achieved the thing called our kids knew we would never leave them. Mm-hmm. And I think that developed a certain immature arrogance.
Yeah.
Because then I can say whatever I want to this person.
Oh, yeah.
I can act however I want. And no matter what they say, I know they're never going to actually forsake me.
Yeah.
But I think what I was guilty of, and I think I think tons of you dads do this, just that browbeating that you mentioned, like I painted my kids into a corner a lot. And I think specifically Addison into a corner because I needed to win. And I thought winning would mean that she would get my point and behavior would change. Yeah, I lost.
She would submit. Come on.
I lost. You know, so that was really it, man. You can exasperate your children so much. And mostly because I was trying to correct, I got a gig tonight. I need to correct this problem. I'm going to correct it on my timeline. I'm going to make it short and efficient, just as if I was a supervisor or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so that tended to be my tone. And man, that just doesn't work. And so even if you're right in principle, like your delivery is 75% of it. Mm-hmm. They know they're willing to hear them. They're willing to hear that they've done something wrong. They might not be willing to hear it when you want to tell them.
Yeah.
And you better not just like serve it up to them. You better create a connection before you, or else you're not going to get through.
Yeah.
And then you're just going to be that, you know, lack of credible guy that I don't have to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting, Sid, where you became so stable that they're like, hey, we can say whatever because you're not going to reject us. And yeah,
how do you create incredible like self-image in your kids without having them become arrogant and overconfident? Because that's what immature people do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why, like I said, with my daughter, she has great confidence, but going, okay, how do I keep it knowing it's going to come up at, you know, the house where you're going to challenge me, but I want you to have that outside of our house. But in here right now, I just need you to be quiet and submit. Like, right. No, I want you to have it, keep it, but you also have to know the balance of.
Yeah. And I think there's something called communicate in times of non-conflict. That has been the mm-hmm. best sort of beacon for me, because you can get a buy-in, you know, you can get all your kids to buy into your family vision for the future if you say it at the right time. And if they buy in like you want them to, it's something that you can refer back to as the anchor point. Mm. Hey, I know you're mad now, but remember 2 weeks ago when we kind of agreed like, hey, we are lockstep with each other as a family. We're solid. I'm the leader of the family because that's my role. I have to be, and I have the experiences that you haven't had. And hey, you agreed all into that. And now like you're acting like it's something totally different, but you were into it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can, if you can establish a vision and get a buy-in in times of non-conflict, then it's something that you can use to hold them accountable to their own words and thoughts to try to get their mind to travel back to, hey, where was the headspace over here? Mm-hmm. Hey, remember, like we're not enemies. Remember, like I have the best for you. Let's remember back to a time when you knew that 2 weeks ago when we agreed on this. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
That's good. I like that communication in
times of non-conflict.
Conflict,
communicate in times of non-conflict. So instead of sitting there having a, you know, ho-hum conversation over whatever, or watching something on TV and it gets done and what do you do next? Well, you know, you can always like connect with that person over something that matters, our family vision or whatever it is. Like, you can get a lot of communicating done in those times when they're ready for it, but you can't force it.
Yeah.
You know, that moment happens and you have to invest a lot of time that isn't that moment for that moment to happen. I didn't do that as well as I'd like to, but for the few times that I did do it and I could get it to work, that's where we have to do it. And so those kids have become incredible adults, and in no small part because they argue and they advocate for themselves, just like your daughter's talking about doing. Mm-hmm. But I really like, when those kids were younger, I would talk to them in a way that I would be able to win conversations in other environments. Mm-hmm. Just tactically.
Yeah.
It's all tactics.
Yeah.
And even though I was right, like the tactic was a bad tactic because these were, you know, these were the little me's, and these were little me's that were, you know, churning a little resentment in there and that were, you know, so. Going back to my dad, he didn't always have a lot of credibility with me because he worked second shift. Now, I never understood, like, is there no other job available? Like, you're a talented guy. Like, you could get a job anywhere, but you're working second shift. I don't understand. And I still don't totally understand, but that was a big reason that he didn't have credibility with me, because we were never creating that good time, that ordinary time together.
Yeah.
What's my point? I think my point was that it didn't come naturally to me to try to find that time. Mm-hmm. You know, Mary would always try to encourage me to find that time, but it's like you got to get the toolbox. So you really do, dads, need to go find resources. Maybe it's this podcast is among them, but go find other things. And I used to read a lot of books, and now I don't, but I listen to tons of podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
And for everyone that's, you know, Joe Rogan blowing off time, kind of passive interest, there's another 30-minute one that I'm really getting a nugget from that's going to help me communicate with my, you know, adult son next time I talk to him or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, having adult kids, gosh, Addison was sad about something a couple mornings ago, and it brought me to tears thinking about it, that my adult 27-year-old daughter was sad. I hated that.
Yeah.
And I still will do... I have much more tools in my toolbox at 49 than I did at 29. At 29, I probably wouldn't have said the right thing the right way. I'm trying to get better at that now so I can just be an asset to them and those people can be as, so that's another thing, man. You can get wrapped up in, making your kids the center of your world, which is a mistake because they're going to leave.
Yeah.
They want to leave. When they leave, they want to leave. And either you're going to be an empty shell and have to find other stuff to do. Or like you realize that, you know, those kids don't belong to you and they never did. Your job is to get them to independence and to get them to be a value in the world. So hopefully they can reflect a light that people will want to learn more about where that comes from. And that's kind of our faith life. And I don't want to talk about the faith life stuff, but you know, that's my goal is to try to get them to be a light and be a value in the world.
Yeah, no, that's good. And especially just like you said to where, you don't want them the center because then you create kids that are self-centered or think there's, you know, like you said with the travel sports where, it's all about me. I'm like, no, there's a family. There's, you know, 4, 5, 6, however many of us here, you're part of that unit. And I think, that's great. Especially like you said, to where so many parents that you get empty nesters go, what do we do with each other? We don't even, you know, like each other.
Totally.
I don't even know what to do because I don't have hobbies of like,
totally.
And I even think about it now of challenging myself of going, you know, I have some hobbies, but going, what can I create? Cause I know I think one dad took up bow hunting because I think his daughter got interested. Let's do bow hunting. And, you know, now they have this hobby to where she's out of the house, but wants to come back like, dad, let's go bow hunt, where you have
that's a great attachment,
that connection to where I'm like, God, that's genius of going, what are some things, you know, that we could do together to where, you know, I think, and nothing against my mom. It's a mom and a son. It's a completely different relationship than a, you know, dad to where, hey dad, I'm building something. Can you come help me? Like, that's easy. Mom, it's like, what do you go do with your mom as, you know, a 30-some-year-old man?
Yeah.
But that's also the other thing to where we don't, doesn't have the hobbies to where we can, you know, go connect and do stuff. So like my brother and I now have gone, hey, you know, let's take up golfing. Why? I mean, sure, it's fun, but, you know, his son is, you know, we've taken our sons out and, hey, just come walk with us kids while we golf and just ways to connect to where I think that's a good thing. But also, like you said, it's healthy because they go, I am important to my dad, but I'm not the center of the universe to where he has a life outside of it. It's a healthy balance of, and you know, even same with your, you know, spouse of like, you're important, but I also have, there's still me and not just this weird mesh that.
Yeah. I think your kids,
the identity thing.
Your kids need to see you be passionate about something that's not, you know, connected to them or whatever. And for me, it was drums and you know, my kids all, well, 2 out of 3 of them play stuff, but more than anything, like they were watching me do the things that I was passionate about. Now, I probably should have dialed that back 20% when the kids were small, but as they got older, like I could do something that I love in front of them and, you know, I was good at it and some of them wanted to participate in it and we resourced them. You know, when Addison, you know, had a talent for this stuff, we got her a keyboard and we had a space, at our house on Colony over by you over there that had a music room and had drum sets and guitars there all times a day. And so it was a resource that those kids could go to and, you know, also feel connected to something that I loved. And those were connection points. And even my son that doesn't play music, man, he loves to talk about music and we love to, you know, just like, chop it up about that type of stuff. And yeah. And same thing. I mean, Mary's got, you know, areas of passion too. And all of our kids know what those things are. Yeah, a lot of them have to do with hosting them. It's not kid-centered, but she wants to have a place where people want to come.
Yeah, that's awesome. You got a whole page of notes there. Did we get all of it?
Well, you sent me those questions, and so...
Yeah, then you sent me all the boys in the hood. So I need to just watch the movie because I started watching all these clips. I'm like, oh, this is...
So, yeah, I think JT asked me who my favorite TV dad or movie dad was, and it was Lawrence Fishburne from his role as the dad in Boys in the Hood. And first of all, Lawrence Fishburne is just cool, right? Mm-hmm. Especially young Lawrence.
Yeah, that's what's weird to see him young because I'm, you know, more
Matrix Lawrence. Yeah,
Matrix and all that.
But, you know, in the middle of, first of all, they're in the middle of Compton, you know, East LA or whatever, and the gang, definitely the gang area and the dangerous part of Los Angeles. And he was not one of the fathers that wasn't involved in the kids' lives. Mm-hmm. And so these, you know, the young black boy, I think, comes to stay with it, live with his dad. And I think that's an arrangement that they made. I don't even know why. But Lawrence Fishburne continued to be exactly who he was. And the son had to, like, kind of acclimate to, I think the dad had a standard and a kind of like a vision for his life and a dedicated way that he wanted to live his life. But sometimes that comes off really stuffy and lame. And in his case, it just came off really cool. He ended up, I think he was like a community organizer. And so he was trying to improve his community. And so what the son was seeing was gang life all around him. But here's my dad that I can come home to every night in a safe house. We're lifting weights together, doing the bench press and the curls, and just talking about, you know, like, this is what a man is. A man, you know, pays his bills and works hard and, you know, cleans up his house and those type of things. And, you know, that's not Ward Cleaver dad. That's called like dad in the real world, in the surrounding that he's in, doing the best thing to, you know, instill in his son. So he's a great movie dad.
And I think, I know these rapid fire, but I just think you made a point of that he had a vision for his life. And I think that's a good key for dads to think about with their kids, where they're drawn that of like, oh, dad has purpose. Dad has a vision. Dad is going somewhere. Like, you know, that's any leader or people are attracted to that, to where like you're going somewhere, to where it's not just like dad goes to work, comes home, watches TV, drinks a beer, and that's it.
Right. Right.
Ugh. Like, no, dad's doing, oh, cool. Dad, like, what are you doing? Let me be a part of, like you said, the drums and the passion, where they want to get involved instead of like,
and even if they do something totally different, they at least see something that was done well, something that was focused on, and you know, I got better over time. Can I talk about a drum thing? Because I like,
yeah, because that's the next question, the hobby you enjoy, which we've hit drums, but
you know, it's odd. Like, I would say that's been a strongest connection point for my identity than, I mean, being a dad and a husband, sure, but like being a musician and not just a drummer. There are some drummers that they just play beats all day long, but I think like I have this creative part and I have this analytical part. So, you know, I'm up to the weeds, and I was thinking about drums when I pulled in the driveway, and I'll be thinking about drums when I leave. Yeah. And not just drums, but, you know, music in general. And I have this great analogy. Like when I was younger, so my dad was a drummer. And so again, that was this big, you know, Green Beret, kind of stoic. I thought my dad was Chuck Norris until I was about 12. Kind of had the look with the stash, you know, the 80s stash. Nice. But he was a drummer, and he was a drummer in club date bands. And yet he wasn't, you know, a big drinker or a big partier. He just loved to go out and play music. And I love that. And I got to see him early on, and it made a huge impression. And what I tell people is, when I saw him playing drums, he had told me that the set that he was playing on, I bought that for you. Now, I think that's kind of a cheap thing to say to a 10-year-old, and you'll get it in, you know, whatever, 6 years.
Yeah. When,
But when he said that to me, and then I saw him playing it, it's like some point, like way, like if you cast a big, you know, something way far out there, like 100 miles out there, like bink, like a beacon.
Yeah.
And from that day, like I've been following that beacon, and I'm not even sure what the beacon is, but it's connected to the drums and music. And oh man, this is my identity and this is what I do. And he did give me those drums, and they were like, remember Phil Collins' drum set with all the toms?
Uh-huh.
It was that.
Yeah.
And they were nice. So he resourced me. And when I was 14, some older kids asked me if I wanted to come and play in their garage band. And I brought that drum set. And nobody that was 14 had a drum set like that. So the older kids thought I was cool because I had this cool gear. And because I had cool gear, I put a high expectation on myself. And I got good. And the ways that I got good were like technique-oriented ways, like fast and cool riffs and Neil Peart and all the showy type stuff. And then I got into bands and I started, you know, playing music with others, and I was that. And you know, the drums is supposed to, drums member of the rhythm section, they are a support, you know, role. They are an offensive tackle. Mm-hmm. You know, they're an offensive lineman type of a role. And I really didn't do that. I wanted to do the showy stuff. Well, Neil Peart can play all this stuff, so I can play it. But I'm playing to people dancing on a dance floor at the Eagles or whatever. So at some point, and I think this had to do with me playing worship music, I realized that if I settled into something that was a nice groove, I could make everybody on that stage feel a little bit more comfortable. And they didn't have to think so much about anything else but expressing themselves the best way possible. So I could see that the band got better when I played my role instead of, you know, being a distraction. Now, five people in the audience like the cool, showy distractions, but for the most part, people aren't paying attention to the drums. They're paying attention to the whole. And I wasn't making the whole better until I realized that I need to play my role. And when the band felt truly comfortable and were expressing to their best, whether it was a dance floor at the Eagles or whether it was Calvary Church, something happened. Like it became a more powerful force. And in this case with worship music, like really trying to focus people's attention and using music to really draw the emotion out of what those words are saying. And I love that stuff like crazy. But I took that model onto every stage. And this was kind of like, you know, hey, what's your role? You're a drummer. Okay, you're an accompanist. Like, what if instead of just being a drummer accompanist, you could be an accompanist to people in your life and you could just begin to add value by not being showy? You know, because I've always been short, I've always had a little man syndrome. Mm-hmm. And dads out there know what little man syndrome is. Yeah. I mean, I even play in sports and, I really love basketball and I'm least equipped for basketball, but I made up for it in my machismo and bravado and trash talking. And I just realized after a while how like truly silly that is. And if you can't accept who you are, then for all the talking you're doing, it's not going to make you a bigger basketball player, whatever. So I think I just matured during that time, but in a drumming scenario, I became a much more popular and in-demand player for lots of different projects because I had found my role. I had taken the natural giftedness, and I had honed it into the place where it could be the most effective. And whether it was a studio date where I could be dependent on to play what I needed to in time and make the music sound and feel good, or being a sub-drummer on different dates, I kind of have the reputation that, hey, I'll learn your set and I'll show up and I'll kill it. And then your drummer can make the next date. I'm just a substitute. I love that role, but I like, that's more and more of who I want to try to be in my whole life. Like, how can I add value without being the noisy thing? How can I add value to my oldest son's life? Maybe it's the right comment to help him put into perspective. Maybe I can add value to that little baby's life by giving her my ordinary time that I should have given the kids when they were younger. And so I really love that kind of like overall role as drummer, as accompanist. If done well with passion and 100% of your energy, you can affect a whole room, dude. I mean, you can get everybody dancing if you do it the right way. Yeah. And the right way isn't more, it's usually less. And the right way isn't more arrogant, it's usually more humble. So really providing a value to my role that really helps, you know, the musical situations that I'm in. But I just think that's a good life kind of lesson too. Like, man, do you need to be showy, or who are you doing this for? Your self-image and your image management, or for the good of, you know, the betterment of whatever situation you're in?
Yeah, man. I like that. Like that you said, to where you settle in, then it allows everyone else to be comfortable and really their best comes out like that.
Totally.
That's a great illustration.
And that's such an exciting time when you feel that happen. And the other players love you, not because of what you did, but mostly because of what you didn't do, like how you're making it feel. Not all the things you're making sound, but how you're making the music feel. And that it's, I feel like that perspective was a gift from God that has allowed. And I think what he was saying is, I gave you a bunch of gifts over here. I'm glad you're using them the right way, but this is really a metaphor, bro. Like, you can use those gifts.
Yeah.
You can use that same principle in the other ways that you're gifted. Uh-huh. You know, the way you talk to people, or the way you meet people, or the way you encourage people, or whatever.
Man, that's, I like that. That's really good. Okay. And the next question is, a dad is fill in the blank.
Dang it. That's the only one I didn't spend much time thinking about. I think a dad is, the stable center. I think it's a lot of things on top of that, but I think primarily it's the stable center. And when I say the stable center, it's the approachable center. It's not the cold, you know, it's not the, you know, my dad was kind of cold. Like he was, there were very few things that he really gave me as far as constructive advice. He hurt my feelings a lot with some of the ways that he would say things to me, though he never directly insulted me, or he never thought I was stupid. He was just being a tired dad chewing out his son. But I, like, he was that center. And so he wasn't the approachable center, but he was the center for me. And he was the representative of hard work. He was the representative of, hey, like, you know, life's going to throw you some hard things, but you're going to have to stand up. And, you know, all that's a little bit machismo, but you know, for me, that was what my dad was. And I think ideally that soft center, like solid, but soft and approachable, and a place that the, your children should always be able to come back to and never fear. I think they've, you know, I'd get mad at them and then they'd fear coming back, probably because I was still a prickly pear for the rest of the half of the day or whatever, or they didn't know. The truth is they probably didn't know. Yeah. I might be in a fine mood or I might be still salty about it, but they didn't know. So they were like, nope, staying away. Yeah. Damn, that's a lost opportunity. If I was the soft center, then you deal with the infraction or you deal with whatever you got to deal with, or even if you put down a sentence or a punishment, then like, let it go, bro. Like don't lord it over them. Don't hang it over their head. Don't use it the next time as an example. And I think those are things that I did. I think that were pretty destructive, but, you know, I wished to have been, and I wish now to be that even center for my adult kids. Like, hey, I had just this interaction with this client, or, you know, this is what school has given me. And I value that they call me for those calls. And it makes me realize that even though there's a lot of things I wish I'd have done better, I've recovered from some of that. And I've shown and explained to them, hey, I'm not what I was. You're not what you were. We're both adults now. Like, we can sort of reset and kind of let go of some of those pains from the past, because they sure gave me a lot of pains from the past and loaded up the baggage on my shoulders. But, you know, let's get off with that and let's move on, you know, making our relationship constructive from here on. Soft center. How's that?
I like that. And there's also like the growth mindset keeps coming back in there. What's the best piece of dad advice you've ever received or heard or read or,
oh, say about 25% of what you think.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
I'm tired. Why are you dragging me through this right now? Mm-hmm. You could say 0% of that. Mm-hmm. This is the same shit that happened last time. There's something you shouldn't say. You got to work on this. I mean, don't even know you're saying it.
Yep.
But if you begin to develop a habit of saying about one of the comments, I can bang out four critical comments in like 10 seconds. Yeah. What if you just said one of them, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah, that one hurts. I can get that.
And you got to die to yourself to do that, because my wife's had a long day. She don't want to hear it. I've had a long day. I want to tell somebody about it to offload it off my shoulders. Here's this kid driving me nuts. And really, I think, honest to goodness, whether you are a Christian or whether you are not, if you believe in God, ask him, like, get in there and dump all of the stuff on your shoulder onto God. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm not sure if you're listening. I'm pretty sure he's listening, mm-hmm. because when I say to him, I don't have anybody to talk to you about this stuff that's in my heart that I'm drowning.
Yeah.
Like, help me not drown. Give me the capacity to not only not drown, but give me that 20%. So when I go home and I walk in that door and I get the reports or whatever, that I have the capacity to manage that in a less emotional way, in a less dramatic way. That's hard.
Yeah.
Jeez,
that's good.
Yeah, give God the stuff that you would be inclined to shoot at your kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, tell God, hey, God, you know this kid keeps doing this.
Yep.
You know I've talked to this kid. What are the words that need to change so that I might be able to get through to him? And that's where I think, you know, no words right now. Like, give it a minute. Like, give it a little space. The mm-hmm. time, what'd you call it? Time travel?
Time machine.
Way cooler than time out or hold on a sec. Time machine is way better.
And the thing I hate, though, of doing that, because God will be like, remember when you did this and how? And you're like, yep, okay. But it does exactly what you're saying, where you pull back and go, oh, now let me respond to my kid with truth, love, and grace instead of the anger that I have of going, oh, yeah.
Instead of making it about you and let me you just, know, my burdens are getting shot at you right now. And even though you deserve some correction, you don't deserve it like this. Mm-hmm. And they're going to wonder why it got heaped on, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
And then you're inconsistent, because then another time you'll do it well.
Yep.
But the fact that you're creating an inconsistency doesn't make you that soft center anymore. Yep. All of a sudden now you're the unpredictable center.
Yeah.
Can I return to this guy or not?
And they're confused. Yep. What brings you pride as a dad?
Well, when my kids were younger, they did rock camp, and it was a legitimate 2-week in the mm-hmm. summer. I don't play really other instruments, but I played bass, and I taught 5 or 6 kids how to play a 30-minute set, and we got to play it on stage. And Addison played drums for a James Brown funk song.
Wow.
Cooper played the guitar for the whole set, and Addison sang some songs. Shelby Schmidt.
Uh-huh.
He's Shelby Grunder.
Yeah.
She was the lead singer. Yo Mama and the Papas was the band. Josh Karkosh. Did you know Josh?
Yep. Yep.
Josh played the drums. He's left-handed. He didn't have a mustache back then.
Uh-huh.
Who else was in the band? Oh, Ryan Lee. You know Ryan?
Yep.
Gosh, I hope.
Wow.
Anyway, that was one of the coolest experiences of my life, because in those 2 weeks, they learned, they did stuff. It wasn't me standing there teaching them a thing. Like, they learned six songs or whatever it was, and then they did them on a great stage. So that was personally gratifying. And so the kids participating in music is a very point of pride for me, because I love music so much. But not leaving Fletcher out, I brought a squat rack into the basement when Fletcher was about 11, and he didn't care about it for a while. But when he started to care about it, he cared about it a lot. And so Fletcher is chasing a 405-pound bench press. He's probably at 390, what's 395, something like that. I don't know. He's 5'7", probably about 220 now, maybe 210.
Jeez.
I think he, you know, deadlifts 600 pounds, and I think he squats 450 pounds or something nuts like that. And he's just as analytical as I am. And he is thinking about weightlifting right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's either engineering or weightlifting. And I used to think, man, you know, are you run amok with this passion? Like, how much time are you devoting to it? And finally, when he helped me understand, like, I love this the way you love music.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, so again, like, I used to like shoot those little barbs out to my 25-year-old, you know, 24-year-old son, like, hey, you know, you better get rid of this, you know, weightlifting focus, because you're going to have a family. It's going to hurt you. Like, I didn't need to see any of that shit. Like, just take it easy.
Yeah.
And so now he definitely has an imbalance and has all his priorities in order. But it gives me great pride to tell people like how strong, and you meet him, he's impressive and he's a warm, wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, getting that weight set in the house and him taking an interest, because I had an interest and was doing some lifting. What else though? You know, when the kids want to come back home, you know, for whatever the reason, I'm the soft center. They don't have to worry about what kind of mood I am in to come over to my house. And at 49, that feels pretty good.
Oh yeah.
My kids are all kind to others, and they are very accepting of those that have differences. So, you know, throughout when we helped some of the Liberians get citizenship when the kids were small, and, you know, we had dinner with some Liberians and we just like spent ordinary time with them. So they got to be around that. You know, my daughter went to Mexico on, maybe it was, Venezuela, maybe Costa Rica. Calvary do some Costa Rica stuff?
Yeah, where did Eddie?
But those kids did downtown Chicago ministry at different times. So they really kind of got to experience a lot of different kind of people and, look you in the eye to have a conversation, and just those basic things. The crazier the world gets, the more, you know, wonderful I think they are as people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So stuff like that.
Nice. I like it. Last question then. What's the story you want your kids tell about you to their grandkids, to Claire, to, or, you know, legacy?
I think I like the trajectory. I think, if they know that my dad's dad died when he was 10, they know well that my dad did better for me than he had done for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they know well that they had done better than I had done for me. So I think that is important. You know, we got rid of some junky family legacy from the past, and I guess we don't talk about that stuff very much, so they're probably not going to talk about it, but I hope they talk about rock camp, and I think they will. And I hope Fletcher would talk in generations about, you know, my dad got me into lifting.
Mm-hmm.
But then also just that, I really am. So if you're in the kids that your age are in, man, picture them at that 15, 16, 17, mm-hmm. picture them at that 22, 23, 24, and really try to imagine who they're going to be. Because it's going to happen. And I didn't do enough parenting with the end in mind. I was just trying to tread water and get the bills paid and, you know, try to get those kids off my back too much when I was young.
Yeah.
But if you have young kids, man, just think about what those next seasons are, because they require different skills. Mm-hmm. I'm like an MMA fighter. You know, I can go to the ground. I can grapple. Yeah. I can kickbox.
Yeah.
I can got Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
So all these seasons of my kids' life and now their adulthood, uh-huh. like I finally have something to offer each of them.
Yep.
But unless you think about it, you're going to be on your heels when they're teenagers if you haven't thought about what that's going to be like. What's the technology going to be like that you're going to have to deal with? And instead of being the parent that's like, I don't mess around with that stuff. Well, you better. Because if you don't have a context for it, then you're going to be less relevant. If you can't sit down and play little video games once in a while with your kids, you're going to have trouble because you're just creating a gap. Where's that going with that? So all that to say, I'm really looking forward to the next season in my life called, I'm going to have 4 or 5 grandkids. And they're all going to know that when they come to grandpa's house, cool stuff happens or it feels great.
Yeah.
It felt great when I went to my grandparents' house and I want to create that space for them. So I guess that's it. You know, my dad, I want them to say my dad was great to my kids. My dad was great to my spouse or my girlfriends or whatever. And, you know, I'm just to be that soft, safe middle.
Soft center. Yeah. I like that. That's awesome. Well, Jamie, thanks, man, for doing the interview.
This has been so fun to talk about this stuff. I never get to talk about this stuff.
No, I love it. Like, and that's what I've had numerous guests like, are we done? Like, can I come back? Like, yeah, man. I mean, you listen to podcasts, they have guests come back. And especially like you're saying, where season's coming where you'll have grandkids. And if you keep growing, I'm going, hey, here's some new stuff. So, yeah, man. It'd be-
Maybe in a few years, I'll come back and talk about the roadmap for grandpas.
Yeah, there you go. And how, you know.
Because the other thing is, since we had our kids early, our kids were teenagers, but all of our friends' kids were like your kids' age because we were so early when we started.
Yep.
And when I talked about, you know, being embarrassed, like when our friends' kids were freaking perfect and they still obeyed and our kids were like,
yep.
Oh, I'm sorry he didn't come. I guess he's not coming to this party or, you know, whatever the case may be. You get ambivalent teenagers. Yep. You know, there was always like, I don't think it was probably ever spoken, but I'm sure away from us, hey, what's going on with Jamie and Mary's kids? I mean, I'm sure that conversation was, I'm a little worried about those kids. And, you know, that's going to be real. Those are going to be real feelings. So how do you respond? Is that going to shake you because your, you know, reality is set in how your kids perform or not?
Yeah.
Cause you got to expect them to fail in bigger and more massive ways and in more ways that are going to get dirt on you than you ever thought when your kids were, you know, and you know that you're a youth pastor.
Yeah. And getting yourself prepared for that of going, oh, there's no way my innocent little 5-year-old is going to just ruin my, you know, not life, but break my heart or
break your heart.
Where you go, but that's a wise thing. You're getting prepared for it now.
Well, you get in this kind of like, you don't want to call it a religious thing, but when you go to church long enough, you know, the church model does a pretty good job of, you know, oh, here are the teenage kids in church that are still in church and sit next to mom and dad. Oh, and they're so nice. And, you know, maybe they are, maybe they're not, but, you know, our kids were perfectly, you know, willing to be themselves and all their ugly warts and humanness. And they didn't care, you know, how it affected us or whatever. But that is kind of this, a little bit of religiosity, like, hey, you know, we've taught you to be a Bible believing, you know, we pray and I've heard you pray. So where's all this coming from? Well, where it's coming from is the rest of the world and all the other hours and all the other schoolyards and all the other friends that show them porn on their phone or all these disgusting things that you are never going to be able to control. And if, you know, that's an example that would have made me shudder, seeing porn on the phone, but it's there. It's going to be there. So instead of like going, I think I'm going to teach my kids how to avoid that. It's not real. Like that's not going to happen. Now, maybe they don't continue to gravitate that way, but they're going to see that stuff. So how are you going to manage in advance? What are you doing in your spirit now to get ready for that moment? Because those are the ways that your heart is truly going to be broken. In all the ways that you're teaching, like you, these nice little Christian kids, or we go to church and pray with our family, like all that stuff's going to get trashed against the rocks in some form, you know, maybe not in the worst form, but you know, they're going to break your heart. So how do you respond to that? Like die into yourself and realizing that it's not about you. And you know, other things I've been saying over the last. Yeah. How long have we been going? An hour and a half?
Hour and a half. Yeah, it's the longest one.
All right. Well, I hope somebody finds this useful. It really is great to talk about all the good things and the hard things being a dad.
Yeah, dude, I appreciate it. I definitely going to listen again because there's a few times I definitely zoned out as to listen to like just your wisdom. And so, yeah, man, I appreciate it.
I think I zoned out and I was talking it. Wait, I'm in the corner of this. I'm in the corner of this room right now. And what are you talking about? What are you even saying under that microphone? It happens sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah, right. This is great, JT. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for the show and keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Dad Talks. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment and leave a review. And make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on any episodes.